the seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the place where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience the joy of being alive. Today's episode, we're going to talk about some really amazing and fascinating topics, including Qigong, the importance of stretching, how to boost immunity, and how to really relax your nervous system. So if you'd like to explore some of these topics or more, in your car or even at your home, then make sure that you hit the subscribe button, especially if you are on your iPhone. If you're on Spotify, you can just hit follow, because what that does is it does something to the algorithm and it allows our show to go in front of more ears or eyes if you're watching a video stream, but it promotes our show and allows us to spread our message, right? So make sure that you hit subscribe or you hit follow if you are on Spotify. And if you'd like to join the official Facebook group of our podcast, the place where all the exclusive discussions happen, where we do a lot of breath work and a lot of fun stuff, then go to mysevenchakras.com/tribe, T-R-I-B-E. That's mysevenchakras.com/tribe. With that being said, let's bring on our special guest for today, Sarah Devine. So Sarah is a White Tiger Qigong senior instructor, and her quest for personal development, wellness, and longevity practices eventually led her to becoming a dedicated Qigong instructor and assistant to Master Tevye Feng, founder of White Tiger Qigong. And this even inspired her to complete a master's degree in sports and exercise science, researching Qigong and the development of interoceptive awareness. And her thesis is being prepared for publication. And she's also working on several courses and book projects at the moment. So this is a discussion that we're all going to enjoy, because as all of our listeners know, that I'm a breathwork instructor, but I have a soft corner for Qigong. And I always love to integrate all these beautiful healing practices in my life and those around me as well. So Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm very honored.
Wonderful, wonderful. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the show is that you not only talk about Qigong, not just from the ancient wisdom standpoint, but also you bring in a perspective of sports medicine, sports science, as well as the importance of exercise, which is really, really interesting when you sort of bring both of them together. So I can't wait to begin our discussion.
Yeah, me too. And also that Qigong, as you mentioned at the very beginning, with the breathwork, brings joy and happiness. So I can't emphasize that enough. That's a wonderful outcome of the practice.
Wonderful. And so in all our discussions, we usually start from the very beginning. And so maybe if you can tell us, where did you grow up and what was your childhood like?
Well, in Australia, they call me a Pommy, okay. Which means I grew up in England. And had a very peaceful childhood in the countryside and a little village in Kent, which is in the southeast. Maybe your listeners will know London. It's about an hour south of London. I grew up there and had a great opportunity to be roaming free in nature, and you know, really just very much at peace with the natural environment. I moved to London to study, and that was a whole different ballgame. Lived in London for 11 years, crazy city. And then I moved to Germany. Actually, I lived in Germany for 5 years and finally ended up in Australia. And I've been here for the last 18 years.
That's awesome. And so you've been to a lot of places, London, Germany, and Australia. What was your childhood like? You know, what sort of influence did your parents have on your upbringing, or maybe the first sort of 7 to 10 years of your life? What was it like?
It was very simple, very ordinary, quite working class in many ways. My parents didn't have much money, but they always emphasized that their children's happiness was key, and they would, you know, let us explore things in our own time, in our own way, which I'm extremely grateful for, because having also worked in the English language field for many, many years and meeting a lot of Asian students in particular, I know that there's a lot of pressure in those cultures, thinking typically of the Chinese students I've met, to constantly perform, constantly achieve. And it was more organic in my childhood. And I think that in part maybe because my sister died when I was very young. She was only 3 and I was 6. And I think that really changed the perspective for my parents on how to engage their children in life and how to encourage them to just be happy, do what they enjoy doing. So I explored many, many, many things at that time. I was into music. I was into theatre. I used to do amateur dramatics with my parents. They were not into any kind of spiritual or personal development per se, but they had nuggets of wisdom which they threw my way quite regularly, and I'm grateful for that.
Wonderful. I think parents play a very important role, right? Maybe not specifically or telling you what to do, but just creating a container for your growth, but also emphasizing the importance of being happy no matter what you do. And I think that can be can play such a big role in the unfolding of a child to an adolescent to an adult later on. But before Qigong, like we all know, we're going to talk about Qigong today, but what was happening before Qigong?
Before Qigong, I dabbled initially in yoga, and I didn't know very much about it, but I went to one or two classes. I can't say I really got into the whole system of yoga, but I got into an understanding of the connection of body, breath, and spirit. Then I was introduced to Zen Buddhism by my then boyfriend, and off we went every week to this dojo in Camden Park, I think it was, in London, and we'd sit on our mats and we'd count our breath, and then we'd do walking meditation, and it was fascinating for me. It just opened up a whole other world of becoming aware of this constant spinning, these constant thoughts, this constant pressure inside me, and that led then progressively to me connecting with Vipassana doing these 10-day silent retreats, which are like they call them, it's like an operation on your, you know, your entire system, your mental and physical body and your emotional body, and that really, really formed a really strong foundation for me to then finally become cognizant of Qigong and start. I actually read about Qigong and knew about Qigong a lot longer ago than when I started practicing it. But about 11 years ago, I was like, oh, okay, now's the time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were doing these different types of practices, yoga, some Zen meditation. You also did a Vipassana 10-day, you know, session. And I've not done Vipassana, but for listeners out there, it's basically just silence, right? It's an exploration into silence. And I was talking to my friend the other day, is that we're so connected to our mobile phones or even social media these days that sometimes we can't fathom not being with our devices for even a day or two. But being for 10 days in silence, away from technology, what did that do for you?
It's a great question, because initially it freaked me out. I'm like, whoa. It's not that I love the sound of my own voice, but I guess I realized I probably do to an extent, you know, because it gives you validity to speak, you know, it gives you meaning in the world, in the people that you interact with. It's so to silence that was very profound. I guess initially, after that initial shock, I grew to like it. As everything slowed down, as I had no obligations, but the practice I was doing, we were meditating for 11 and a half hours a day.
Whoa.
Everything became a meditation. Eating a small plate of salad took an hour, you know. You just, everything, you just entered a whole other realm of perception. I can remember looking at hoverflies and seeing into this hoverfly and seeing its spirit and its energy. And so by the time the 10 days was up, and I have done these a few times now, each time I have actually not wanted to speak. It's almost like you had to be coaxed back into it. I'm like, oh, actually, I could stay here a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And so the net effect of that is that, first of all, that you become aware of your own chatter, how deeply it goes, how ingrained it is, mm-hmm. but also then how you can learn to become a witness and bear witness to it and not become not remain attached to these processes. And you do this just through simple observation. You just observe day in, day out, the activity that's going on inside you. You bear witness without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just helped me to be a kinder human, a more compassionate person, and a more patient person.
Wow, that's very interesting. Because sometimes we have the chatter, but then we try to drown the chatter in something else. The chatter is always there.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that when you are now focusing fully on the chatter, it's a different experience altogether. So then, okay, so you had this experience, and then what sort of deep within you, I guess at a soul level, you were craving for something more or craving for something different that sort of led you towards Taoist Qigong? Yes. So what was
that? That's so true. I always felt it, no matter where I was in the world. I felt compelled to travel physically and to live in different places, and B, to not settle for life as I saw many of my friends doing, which is perfectly fine. Convention, there's nothing wrong with it, but it wasn't in me. There was some other desire. So by the time I left Germany and went traveling, I just felt called. I had to go. I had to go, and I had to start in Australia. And within a very short space of time, I entered a very deep realm of healing and transformation through, firstly through Qigong, but also I was introduced to a practice at that time called body electronics, which is a science of bodily regeneration. It works with extended acupressure and nutrient saturation, and also the holding of polarity in the body, and understanding that everything, that I guess the yin and the yang of your experiences, that to work through traumas in the body. So these things will help me to progress.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what is the name called again?
It's body electronics. It's the science of bodily regeneration. It was founded by Professor Dr. John Whitman Ray, who is sadly no longer with us. But and also it's quite a little known modality. And I don't think there are many people practicing at the moment, because it's quite intense. You have to hold points on people or be held at very specific points on the body, and can go on for quite long periods of time to actually start to release emotional trauma from your system.
Mm. So interesting. So what was happening in your life at that point in time in Australia? And talk to us about how you actually came across this form of Qigong.
I had the great fortune one day to meet Jai, who's my partner. We met at a vegan picnic, actually. He sat down next to me. We started chatting. Mm-hmm. And we discovered very quickly that we both were really interested in the works of Master Mantak Chia, who is a very well-known Taoist medical Qigong master. Mm-hmm. He has a center in Thailand, although his roots are Chinese. And we started chatting about these books and these practices, and I talked a little bit about some of the work I'd done there. And he eventually said, well, why don't we do some Qigong together? He'd been practicing Qigong for quite some time. He was also a very accomplished yogi. So I started learning from him. And I saw the potential in these practices to not only help me become, healthier and for personal and spiritual development, but I felt compelled to actually learn to teach it. So once I had the money, once I had the opportunity, that's mm-hmm. when I put on my backpack and went to Thailand. And at first, initially, before I met Master Tevye, I studied with Master Mantak Chia.
Oh, awesome. So a couple of questions about mine now. I want to go for a vegan picnic. That's one of the things I want to do. And secondly, so I've heard about Mantak Chia and I've read one of his books as well. And I know that he has this center in Thailand. And what I've been wanting to do, I guess one of my things on my bucket list is to attend one of his darkness retreats.
Oh, yes.
It's just to be in darkness for three days or 7 days or whatever it is. Yeah. But just I've heard people having really profound spiritual experiences as a result of being away from sunlight for a given period of time. It's just these intermittent breaks that we give ourselves in so many different areas, whether it's intermittent hypoxia, intermittent fasting, intermittent sunlight, intermittent meditation. Yeah. It seems to do wonders for our body, right? But that's
absolutely. I do want to do that sometimes. Well, because you're reducing your need for sense gratification, and so you know the outward emission of chi is no longer there. Everything has to turn inwards. And then also while you're in the dark room retreat, you will do these very profound practices like the Khan and Li practices, the fire and water practices. You learn how to steam your energy, your chi, and bring it up to the brain and really open up the pineal and the pituitary glands. I guess what's happening there then is you're getting these more sensitive signals and the piezoelectric effect in the pineal gland, and you're able to tune into magnitudes of experience that are not commonly perceived in our everyday waking states.
Yeah, it sort of makes sense because I think either we've forgotten or our normal state is that we're able to notice only a very small spectrum of light, right? But there's so much other information that's bouncing around us. And so I think these practices in a way allow us to start remembering and being able to notice these or have these extra sensitivities or these abilities. Mm. So the exercise that you mentioned, was it steaming the what? Sorry?
Oh, it's in the Universal Healing Tao system, it's called the Khan and Li, and there's a lesser Khan and Li and a greater Khan and Li and greatest Khan and Li. And I haven't trained with Master Chia in those specifically, but I do a similar practice with Master Tevye that has a different name. But the principle is the same, that we're working with the yin of the lower Dantian, this potent power point of energy below the navel, and the yang qi of the upper Dantian. Okay. And through our breath, we're learning to, we call it steaming because we're actually pumping fire in the body and the water is heating. And then we're bringing the energy up into the brain, and it's then having these profound effects in, as I said, mainly those glands, releasing the neurotransmitters like the dopamine and the pinealine, which have anti-aging properties, anti-cancerous properties. And then we also finally we learn to bring the energy back down, and we store it safely in the lower Dantian.
Got it. And how similar is that to the microcosmic orbit then, which Mantak Chia speaks about, where you're taking it up and bringing it down, taking it up, bringing it? Is that something similar, or is that different?
That's different because you're using a different channel. So in the Khan and Li practice, you're using the thrusting channel, which is right through the center of the body. It's a very yin channel, whereas the microcosmic orbit works through the governor and conception vessels, and the governor vessel, or the functional, as it's also known, is a yang vessel that we would typically perceive running up the back of the spine into mm-hmm. the head. And then the conception vessel is the yin vessel coming down the front of the body.
Mm. Interesting. So you come across Qigong and then you study with Mantak Chia for a while. And so at that point, what do you like most about Qigong? Maybe for somebody who's new to Qigong. Maybe at that point also, or maybe in general, like what do you like most about Qigong?
I liked at that point that it was teaching me to sense inwardly in a way that felt even more profound than the Vipassana meditation, because we were working with different ways of breathing. So the breathing, the way the body was either in posture or in movement is intrinsically connected to how you breathe. Mm-hmm. And that in turn is also intrinsically connected to your spirit, or how your mind, your intention spirit is directing everything in the body. So I thought this was marvelous. And I didn't understand half of it. I just mm-hmm. sat there. I was there for 4 weeks, you know, I was doing my basic instructor training, and I thought, well, I'm going to absorb what I need to know at this time. And that's going to be where I start. And that's going to work with me to have some very profound effects. Many listeners may know the term healing crisis. I always like to think of it as healing transformation, because something is triggered in the body that you have to then go, or you have a choice to follow it through to actually then to heal from it. So I had quite a few experiences like that of emotional traumas that had been locked inside me.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's so interesting. When you do these different practices, whether it's yogic breath work or Qigong, mm-hmm. you have a way of, at a molecular level, allowing for the stuck or stagnant energy to get unlocked, right? And that leads to Correct. The releasing of trauma. And that's, yeah. It can lead to you feeling like it's getting worse, but you're sort of decluttering the home, right? In a way.
That's a lovely way of putting it. Yeah. So you're not only giving yourself the opportunity to declutter, but then you're giving yourself the tools to maintain an orderly household. And it doesn't mean that we don't all experience emotion. I mean, it's so intrinsic to the human experience, right? We can't just... If we say we don't experience it, we're probably suppressing it. So, however, it may lessen your interpretation of the emotion. So whereas before, maybe you might feel anger and you might feel a sensation rising in the body, then you might attribute to that feeling, this is anger, I am going to feel angry about something, he shouldn't have done that. You can say, okay, well, I'm experiencing this feeling. Then you can go into releasing your acquired mind. So what is it that I am that's triggering this anger? Why should I be feeling this anger? It's not all about me. Life is actually not all about me. So it's when you can get out of that ego perspective, then you can start to say, well, is it actually serving me to feel this anger? And there may be a time where anger has a, you know, it really serves to propel something forward, that's fine. But quite often it's a redundant feeling. It just leaves us feeling worse off and scatters our energy. So in the practices that we learn with Qigong, we can take that anger, we can say, I hear you, I see you, but I'm gonna go one up on you, anger. I'm actually going to bring in a feeling, a stronger, more powerful virtue that can help to alchemize, to transform you. I'm going to bring in a feeling of forgiveness. And I bring in that forgiveness, and then I see what happens. And as you get better at it, it's so powerful.
Yeah, that's so interesting to say, because I remember a few years back, I was interviewing one other Qigong master, and he said, cheese, you go to MC Square.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, you know, once you realize how energy works, you find out that all your emotions are nothing but energy, and anger is a form of energy. It's a strong energy. Right? It can be very destructive. Mm. But then you can also use this really destructive energy, you know, pull yourself away from it, make it very objective, look at the anger, but then also transmute the anger into something that's more creative and that can have the ability to transform the world. So that's a really interesting perspective to bring. And speaking about health, how does Qigong sort of define health?
It defines it on a number of levels. So we can see from a purely physical perspective, there are many, let me say, many thousands of types of Qigong. And so if I can go back to the Tao Garden for a moment, when I saw Master Tevye and I saw him walking and moving, I think he was just on his way to breakfast or something, I thought, who is that guy? I want some of what he's got, you know. It was just so obvious and profound in his body. And so I made some inquiries and I learned that he was master of the White Tiger Qigong School. And through my investigations about these types of practices, saw that it's a very external form of Qigong as well as internal practice. So there's a lot of movement of the body, and this movement of the body in conjunction with the internal alchemy practices can, first of all, on a physical level, release stuck energy. So we're working with the meridians in the body. We're opening up these pathways, which will have a connection to the organ systems in the body. So we have a freer flow of energy. We learn to then cultivate this energy so that it doesn't go to waste. So we can circulate it in different manners. Some of those I've already explained. We can utilize the energy in the microcosmic orbit, for example, or doing that other practice I told you about. We then can through the movement, we get these deep compressions into our organs, compressioners. So we're squeezing the organs and we're squeezing them like a sponge. So we're getting fresh oxygen, fresh chi, fresh blood. We're releasing stuck energy, toxins, and our organs learn to hang more effectively in the body. A lot of people, you know, these days are kind of compressed over. Everything's a bit stuck. So we get these wonderful openings. We work with the fascia, very much with the fascial body and the fascia that surrounds, houses the muscle and is also within the muscle itself, holding the cells and the muscles bundles together. The different movements that we do in Qigong actually ring out like a towel in this White Tiger Qigong, and the fascia, so that you get this influx again of fluids into the fascial bed. You get it's quite responsive, elasticity, an elastic response. So if you look at my skin, I mean, I'm 54 and it's still, you know, it's doing that. That's what we want to see. This is a way to keep the body healthy on the physical level. In conjunction with your breathing, we learn that breath guides movement. So you learn how to move more effectively. And I know you know this, right, from breathwork. You learn to regulate your autonomic nervous system. So you learn to tap into that parasympathetic state more effectively, or to balance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. So you're toning your vagus nerve, which is, you know, a super important part of that. And then finally, on the spiritual level, you're cultivating your shin. Your shin is your refined chi, and this is your wisdom body, if you like, your wisdom mind. You're in Taoist practices, they call it the upright heart rather than the human heart. The human heart is the reactive one. The upright heart is, you know, responding to the connection to the forces of nature, which is intrinsic to the Taoist medical Qigong practices.
Yeah, so super. So I love your explanation. And what you're saying is that when you do Qigong, you're not just working on your body, you're not just working on your organs, you're not just working on your mind. It's like you're working on so many different things. And when you go to the gym, obviously you're working out your muscles and they're squeezed and you put a pressure on them and allows them to grow. But what you're implying or what you're suggesting is that your organs also need to be squeezed and wrung out or held in a certain way that allows them to really nourish or maybe secrete certain hormones or certain chemicals that are needed for the functioning of our body.
That's right. So
that's really, really profound. And also the fact that we have these different levels of energy. So you have the jing, right? So you have the jing and then you have the qi and you have the shin. But you're also in the process of refining that energy, allowing it to go on top and regulating your function at every level. So the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual. So,
and we call that the three harmonies. When these things come together, when the body, the breath, and the spirit come together, and we learn the through this harmonization, the deepest levels of relaxation in the body. We relax just the outer part of the body, then we can relax so the posture, then the muscles, then the meridians, and then finally we can even relax into our organs and into our bones. We can refine everything to a single point of focus as we're doing this. This brings healing and transformation. This then actually takes you into the realm of transforming your perception of self, how you can maximize your energy to just the best way, the best you can possibly be, the best version of yourself.
Action Tribe, are you finding it hard to de-stress and unwind in the midst of this crazy pandemic? Come join us for a soothing, relaxing breathwork session online on Zoom. Now, I do these sessions for our paid members twice a week, and I've received so many powerful testimonials from people who've received a lot of support, comfort, and healing from these sessions. And to show you just how powerful these yogic breathwork practices are, every month I do a breathwork intro workshop for people who'd like to give this a shot. In the past, people have paid anywhere between $10 to $20 for a drop-in. But for a short while, I've decided to make these sessions available for just 50 cents a ticket. And these sessions are live, but you just pay 50 cents. So if you'd like to learn how to calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss using your breath from the comfort of your home, visit mysevenchakras.com/breathworkintro. That's mysevenchakras.com/breathworkintro. I'll see you soon. Yeah, that's so true. I mean, from the yogic standpoint, I mean, yoga is also pretty interesting, but what it says is goal setting is good, right? But a lot of times we set goals without doing the inner work, and we set these goals that to us are our goals, but then we achieve those goals only to find out that the ladder was pointing on the other wall, and what we really wanted at the soul level was that. And so part of what we're doing is, in a way, erasing those subconscious imprints, those programmings, that way of thinking that we're used to because of some interaction that we might have had or some negative experience from year 1 to 7, and that becomes our goal, but that's not necessarily our goal because that's sometimes based on our ego or what we feel others would, would want, not what we truly want. And what you're sort of suggesting is when you do the work, you'll have goals, but then you really be able to make an impact at your soul level. Something that, makes your soul joyful because that is in alignment with your true calling, the reason why you're here on this earth.
Perfectly expressed. Yeah. And I'm so grateful to have found that through finding this Qigong. Absolutely.
Awesome. So could you talk to us a bit about the origins of White Tiger Qigong?
Yes. So it's a practice of Qigong that Tevye founded based on two elements. So the first is the Taoist medical Qigong. Now, there are different forms of Qigong. There's been martial Qigong, Buddhist Qigong, and modern medical Qigong. And the Taoist medical Qigong has its roots in ancient Lao Tzu Taoism. So people may have heard of the Tao Te Ching, the book of the Tao, the integrity of the Tao. And the I Ching, the book of changes. And then classical Chinese medicine, which is, if you will, it's like the forerunner of traditional Chinese medicine. So all of these things come together and to form Taoist medical Qigong, and their fundamental principle that upholds this Qigong is that you're connected to nature and you look to the patterns within nature. You look to the as within, so without. I mean, this is really present in many Eastern traditions I know of as well, that you understand the union of opposites, that the yin and the yang of experience internally and externally,
right?
That you understand the rotations and the spiraling in the universe is echoed inside how our bodies very body functions. Like our spine is like the sun, you know, and our shoulders are the moon, and there's a deep echoing of these systems within the human body. So that's very fundamental to the Qigong. In actual fact, one of the key practices that I've learned is five animal Qigong, and this was created over 2,000 years ago by Hua Tuo. And he looked into nature and he saw animals moving, like the monkeys. He was like, oh, okay, so how does the monkey get this bendy, swaying element to pick the fruit? And what's the benefit of that? And which organ is associated with it? So he developed this beautiful system.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's so interesting. And so my question is, when somebody does Qigong, or if I'm doing Qigong right now, and especially through practice, I would find out that it's healing in nature, right? It's healing me. It's you know, curing me or allowing me to reduce stress. And stress is the biggest cause for illness. Sure. So if I'm addressing the stress, then I'm, you know, taking away a large chunk of my issues. Yeah. So I understand that Qigong is inherently healing in nature. So when you say medical Qigong, what extra are you doing there? How is it different from, you know, traditional Qigong?
Okay. So this medical aspect means that we focus in on particular organs. As so one movement may be working on, for example, the liver. So we spoke about monkey before, so we'll stick with the monkey movement, or the leopard in five element Qigong. It works with specifically targeting the squeezing of the liver and the expansion, squeeze and expand. There's this rhythmic pulsing movement that really exercises your internal organ. And with that, the movement also stimulates the meridian, so the pathway of energy that is associated with that organ.
Yeah.
And then finally, the meditations that we practice dwell upon the associated emotional components that are typically associated with that organ. So in the case of the liver, it's anger and releasing with forgiveness or playfulness even, like the monkey is so playful.
Yeah, that's something I've observed as well. If you look at modern men or women, there's a tendency to consider animals not as intelligent as human beings. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of like a hierarchy of sorts, and for some reason they've placed humans at the top of it, like the humans are the most intelligent. But if you look at the ancient elders, the yogis or the Taoists or even the shamans, they looked at these animals and they sort of drew a sense of wisdom. It's like, how can I learn from that animal or this animal. And so in the five elements, you've got the dragon, you've got the tiger, you've got the leopard, you've got the snake, you've got the crane.
Yes. Right?
It's just a bird, but it's a crane. And then you're not only learning from it, but then you're also emulating the, you know, the unique characteristics or the movements of those animals and obviously gaining a lot of benefit from it. So isn't that amazing?
it's one of my favorite aspects. So we tap into the spirit of the animal itself, and the associated element, for example, with dragon you mentioned there. So you've got the element of water. So we will then perform the movement with this strength of the dragon, but the fluidity of water as well. You think about it, you see these mythical dragons flying, and even though you might immediately think, oh, a dragon, fire, well, actually they flow. Flow like water. And I can give you an example. Actually, when I was running my experiment last year for my Qigong study for my master's thesis, I was teaching, one of the forms I taught was the tiger eats its prey.
Yeah.
And it's a very strong, relatively yang movement. And there's a component where you press down and you give 100% tension and you hiss and then you chew and then you stick your tongue out. And you know, all of these things have a meaning and a reason to them. But my students, when they were first introduced it, were like, oh, you know, I'm a bit self-conscious, but As they progress, they said, well, actually, Sarah, now I get it. I understand that it's not just about, you know, the physical benefits. I'm actually feeling that fierceness. I'm actually feeling that strength. I'm actually feeling that element of metal quality. I'm actually feeling more precise from doing this practice. And all of those things they were able to get from this repetition of the tiger.
Right. I see a lot of benefits, not only in terms of the physicality of it, because you're in these actions, you are having an influence on your physiology, but also at a psychological level, just because you're drawing in that alter ego of the tiger, it's going to really help you in situations when you have to be that tiger or where you have to be that leopard or that snake or, you know, whatever that might be. Something that comes to my mind is, so I do these breathwork workshops, and during the in-person session the other day, because I do a little bit of ecstatic dance as well and shaking. And somebody told me, I don't know about that. You know, I don't consider myself a dancer, and I'm not sure about the shaking. And I totally get it, because I myself, for the longest time, and I still don't consider myself a dancer. But if you look at the animal kingdom, when a dog is in stress, what the dog does is shakes, right? They shake and release all the stress. But for some reason, as humans, we want to look cool and we want to look good. And we don't want to look, you know, stupid or funny in front of our peers, which is crazy. But as soon as people sort of push a little bit beyond their comfort zones, they realize the tangible difference that they feel before and after. And these things work. So...
They certainly do. And interestingly enough, the first thing that we do when we're moving to warm up is shaking it out. So for that very reason, it's a profound practice. I mean, if you've got no more time to practice other than 10 minutes, I would just shake for 10 minutes. Do a bit of standing meditation, and has a very deep effect on the body.
Yeah, I noticed in one of your videos you were doing the shaking.
Yeah.
What does Qigong say about shaking? I mean, anything else that it says in terms of benefits of shaking or of doing this?
So we say from a warming up perspective, you're loosening up the muscles and joints. You're warming up the tissues of the body, the muscles, the fascia. But you're also, as you bounce with the heel, you're bringing chi up from the earth into the yang chuan point on the base of the foot. So that's the kidney one point. So you're getting a, you know, jolt of connection to earth chi through the body, and then you're kind of moving it then up through the body. And if you have stale or stagnant chi, you're also starting to release it through this practice.
Wow, that's so interesting. Mm. So I didn't know that that's a point for the kidneys. So there's some connection happening there for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you're very interested in the sports science of it, right? Sports science and exercise. So how does sports science and Qigong blend? What's the connection over there?
Well, I became interested in this because just finishing on our earlier conversation, what is White Tiger Qigong? It's not just the Taoist medical Qigong. This was Tevye's approach to investigate Qigong from a sports science perspective. So looking at how the body moves biomechanically, what's happening from an exercise physiology perspective, what are the kinesiological sensations that you're having. That shouldn't be a word. how Qigong can be used for maximizing your gains in other exercises in sport, or even in, let's face it, in non-exercise modalities too. So all of that, when I met him, fascinated me. We were learning about bones and joints and how do you tell the difference between whether it's just a range of motion issue or whether there's actually, bone on bone, the bone can't go any further. That's why not all of us are going to be able to do a deep stance in snake. It's just your hip won't necessarily physically allow it. And I thought, well, that's a really, I'm curious about just finding out a little bit more about that. And then what Tevye did that no one else has done so far is he brought in an expert called Joseph Schwartz, who works he's based in Colorado. I think his business is dynamic neuromuscular assessment. And he developed this way of looking at the initiation of movement and the development and follow through of the movement called the principal actions of the five primary kinetic chains. So Tevye and he developed this into a system of a teaching technique. So while we're moving, we're learning about how breath guides movement and how important that is. We learn about shock absorption and rebound. So how are we meeting the earth force and how is that force coming up into our body? We learn about axial stability and how having the central axis of the spine is and how moving it and holding it properly is important for the transmission of energy. And then we learn about how coiling movements and uncoiling movements generate and realize kinetic energy in the body.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. And that is, so that fascinated me. And I thought, wow, if I'm going to take that one step further, I want to learn more. I want to learn more about anatomy. I want to learn more about physiology. I want to learn about, when I understand what's going on with breathing more, what's actually happening in my pulmonary system, how's that affecting the heart? What's the connection to the sacrum and the cranium? We've actually got this pumping motion when we breathe properly that brings cerebrospinal fluid up into our brain. And I want people to know about that. And I think a lot in my environment anyway, in this community here, this culture, people want scientific explanations for things. And while I'm not suggesting for a moment we should say, take away all the mystery, then there is still a bit of mystery. There's generally a way, or science is looking for these ways to explain things.
Yeah, well, science, when you bring the science in and when you show the evidence and the research, it makes it way more interesting, right? You sort of know the why behind what you're doing and how it's benefiting you. And when you sort of quantify and add some empirical numbers, it makes it really interesting for the modern mind. So I see why people do that. Yeah. I was listening to or watching a video by Ben Greenfield. I'm not sure if you know about him, but
I know the name. What was the video?
He was talking about longevity and some of the levers that you can pull from a biohacking standpoint that can really optimize your health. And he did speak about the coiling. So that's how I remember. And I know a lot about, there's a lot of discussion about movement right now, right? And how it's connected to longevity and just living, leading a better, more fulfilled life. So why should someone listening to this episode pay more attention to sports science and exercise? I mean, is it only for elite athletes?
I mean, my journey with my own body has been interesting because I actually did, when I was in my, when I was 30, I ran a marathon and I didn't have the feeling I really knew what was going on at a neuromuscular level. I mean, just do it. And I knew it was, in theory, it was good for me.
Yeah.
I actually slipped a disc during training.
Oh, really?
Which then, you know, that was something that helped me to sort of rewire the way I was thinking about my body. And it's been a long process, but I thought, well, I need to feel it from the inside out. I need to really understand what's going on, not just from an experiential level, but also just, you know, from a mechanical level, from a systemic level, to be able to then help other people to know why they should be moving, and whether it's Qigong, whether it's yoga, whether it's you know, going for a walk every day, it's to say on a basic fundamental level, you know, you're going to live longer.
Yeah.
if you learn to breathe better, if you increase your VO2 max, your ability to absorb oxygen in your system, you're going to live better. If your fascia is less sticky, your organs hang more effectively in your body, you're going to heal more quickly. If you are emotionally more responsive you're more responsive to your emotional body in a way that's productive rather than harmful. That's very important too. Mm-hmm. So, and that's also part of sports science, because we look at sports psychology and exercise psychology, and it makes you feel good, right? So moving makes you feel good.
It does.
And one important key though, and I think this is very important to stress, this difference between Qigong and exercise, is that you can fatigue from exercise. You shouldn't fatigue from Qigong. You may while you're in the throes of learning, but you actually develop a profound relaxation response. You should be able to find what I call dynamic relaxation. So this, you can settle into a posture, settle into a movement, tap into the deepest relaxation response, so that you can keep going for, you know, longer. You've got more stamina. And then when you don't, in those days when you just don't, that you can do a softer practice. So you learn to modify your practice according to your environment externally and internally.
Interesting. I mean, it seems like when you learn these practices and these techniques, you sort of take control of your physiology, right? You're taking control of your nervous system, so that when you notice that you're stressed out or chronically stressed, you can, you know, switch off that negative stress response and switch on the rest and digest. And when you're feeling tired, you intuitively are connecting with yourself and then, you know, adjusting the exercise, right? So it's all about listening to your body, but also tools so that you're not overstressing yourself. So that is really interesting. And one of the words you used, I mean, speaking about long words today, words that shouldn't exist, but something you talk about is proprioception. Is that what it is?
Proprioception.
Yeah. What exactly is that?
So we have thousands and thousands of little receptors, these neuroreceptors in the body. And the proprioceptors help us to understand or sense how our body is moving and our position of our limbs in space. We have them inside as well as sort of closer to the external part of the body. And we, so that's one aspect of for example, learning to balance more efficiently as we become more responsive proprioceptively to what's going on in the foot. And we learn to be more aware of how the rest of our body is moving relative to another body part. Because when we are regularly practicing Qigong, we have more awareness and sensitivity to what we call the kinetic chains. And the kinetic chains are just how your different joints are connected by muscle and connective tissue and fascia, and how energy transmits and transfers between the joints to enable you to move effectively. So proprioception is happening at that level to help you understand these connections, these kinetic chain connections. Mm-hmm. And then I'm even more interested in that other big word, interoception.
Okay.
So, I think you mentioned before interoceptive awareness. So the interoceptors are what guides us to be cognizant of our internal processes. Okay. So on a very basic level, you know, if you need to pee, your body's going to tell you, your bladder is going to start sending signals. If you're hungry, your belly's going to rumble. You're going to be aware of that. But it can go much, much deeper. And as you progress with Qigong, you can become aware of your entire fascial body. And it feels like a suit of armor wrapping around your muscles. You can become aware of the actual rivers of energy flowing through the body. Mm-hmm. And you can also become more aware of the origins of emotion. And so you may experience them generating from particular organs quite mm-hmm. typically, but sometimes people are surprised and say, well, actually I felt this emotion starting in my foot. I mean, that sounds strange, but why not? You know, everyone's different. So through developing our interoceptive awareness, we are matching this awareness with an understanding of our perception of things. And that perception is created by our environment, our upbringing. You know, you may live on a planet where anger is experienced as something exciting. You're going to have a far, far different response to it than, oh, anger should make me feel like this, annoying. Right. So then you can say, okay, well, I can retrain myself. I can become aware of these internal processes, and I can actually tweak my response to what's going on. And I can do that through breath. I can do that through thought and intention.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, the fact that your culture, the way you live, or the norms of the place that you're surrounded with can determine the perception that you have about the emotion that you're feeling. You know, if you're a young man, rage is good. You're supposed to be angry, and but in another culture, it's like, dude, you're stressed out. You got chronic stress, and so I think that's why these devices like the HRV monitor is so important, right? So that you look at the numbers and it say, oh, you got your fight and flight nervous system is overactive, and you need to stimulate your vagus nerve now and extend your breath so that you can relax it. And that sort of takes out the cultural context or the norms that you're so used to. You know, these days you say this is a new normal. And so I think people are getting used to this higher level of stress. But then that's where I guess biohacking helps, is because you're looking at the numbers and it has an objective viewpoint in terms of your level of stress. And you can do something
exactly about it. Exactly. So you can use those, like the heart rate variability monitor. You can just, on a very simple level, you can just check your own pulse. You know, you can you can do the Bolt test. So you can inhale, take a deep exhalation, and then just see how long you can hold the breath before you have the desire to inhale again. And that's going to, you know, see how well you can tolerate the buildup of carbon dioxide in the body. And what you can do before you start practicing Qigong, or any time, you can say, well, okay, I'm going to do these key performance indicator tests, And then I'm going to see how I am at the end of a session, of a week, however you determine. And that can be really, really helpful. You're right, to gauge your progress.
Absolutely. And you talk about the importance of dynamic stretching, right? And I see a lot of talk about stretching these days. And I do stretch before and after a workout. But I somehow feel that stretching is much larger than that. So could you talk to us a bit about the science behind dynamic stretching and what that's doing for us?
Yes. So most people are familiar at least with static and dynamic stretching. So in the static stretch where we coax the muscle to lengthen, to increase the range of motion from the joint through the limb. And it has an application, particularly in a cool down context. But when we're warming up the body, we want to do this dynamic stretching, because the static stretching can actually decrease the strength of the muscle for a number of hours. So in the Qigong that we do, this White Tiger Qigong, the dynamic stretching is not just taking a limb progressively through a range of motion, and that is the, sort of the definition of the dynamic stretching, and that is good for you because it's, you know, leading the joint to open up in a safe way. But we also then incorporate these other elements of contracting while lengthening. So there's actually a strengthening component to the dynamic stretching. We also have what we call flossing. Now, I think flossing has become a kind of a fancy word recently in sports science, tissue flossing. So we've spoken before about how when you get this lengthening of the fascia, but at the same time, the co-activation of functional opposites. So you're getting a coil, a dynamic tension in the fascia. This is another way that you're easing the body into warming up, but also, you know, in and of itself, it's a way that just will stretch the body safely and engage the fascia in this elastic component, so it will make this elasticity stronger. We also have nerve flossing, where we you know, for example, with the carpal tunnel syndrome, people often have this carpal nerve here. If you gently, I lost the camera for a minute. If you gently flex and extend. Mm-hmm. So we have movements like this that are just gently compressing the nerve and then opening the nerve softly, and that will help any inflammation in that area.
Okay.
So all of these elements. Oh, and the joint flossing, of course. So, for example, the wrist and ankle flossing. We're taking the wrist through a full range of motion, and you'll see this in some of the forms like serving teacups, where we're holding this cup of tea in our hand, and we bring the hand around, and we're opening up the shoulder, and we've got this beautiful complete.
Okay.
Range of motion in this beautiful joint flossing in the shoulder.
Interesting. Now, firstly, because our podcast is not a sports science podcast, many people might be wondering what exactly is fascia. So maybe if you could talk a bit about what fascia really is.
Yeah.
That would really help people understand this conversation a bit better.
Thank you. Yes, it's a good point. So fascia is a proteinous, a sticky proteinous substance. It's like a web that actually holds us together, essentially. It's underneath the skin. There are different layers of fascia. It's in around muscle, and it's within muscle as well. And there's actually a gentleman called Tom Myers who wrote a book called Anatomy Trains, he interpreted fascial bodies into 12 different lines, if you will, and later discovered they kind of approximate in many, many ways the meridian lines in ancient Chinese medicine, which is pretty fascinating. So these correlations between the fascial body and the energy, the qi body, the qi channels. So fascial health then comes into play in Qigong. And also fascia holds strings of muscles together. So we spoke about that kinetic chain principle. So yeah. In a kinetic chain, you know, you may have a number of different muscles, and there's a fascial body that will hold all of those together. So you've got, for example, the lateral line that starts down by the foot, comes right up the side of the body. The front line, again, starting in the toes, coming right up into the neck. And therefore, the way you move your toe can affect the way your chest moves.
Okay.
So because we have this fascial connection, and we don't tend to think about that when we move in normal everyday movements, or the average sport, I don't think, takes it into account. So
right.
That's why it's such an essential, or such a, we focus on it so intensively in White Tiger Qigong, because we have this understanding that the health of the foot relates to the health of the shoulder and vice versa.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting, because then you sort of start to think about the interconnectivity of our entire body. So Could you give me an example of when the fascia might not work as usual, or some, you know, yeah, something has gone awry?
Yeah. So when fascia is less responsive, it becomes quite sticky. And that can happen typically with age, but also through trauma. And this can be physical trauma, but it can also be emotional trauma. So one example that probably encompasses both would be if people are typically quite hunched over, so they're compressing into the chest a lot through perhaps the desk job. But this can also be initiated by grief and sadness. We often close down, we're drawing into ourselves, and so everything becomes stuck. So that on a physical level, the fascia is getting sticky, and from the medical Qigong perspective, the energy can't flow properly through it. And that's why we redress it through these practices.
Mm. So what you're doing is you're sort of stretching and allowing the fascia to go back to normal, facilitating the moving of energy across the meridians as well. Okay.
So then you've got this perfect blend of the fascial integrity and fascial tension. I mean, we need the, without the tension, we'd be dead, right? So, but if you think of a Buckminster Fuller dome, you know, how he had the Bucky dome, and that this perfect example of tensegrity, and that's what we're looking for in the fascial body as well, so that we can respond, one aspect, one side of the fascia can respond to the other side, but they'll maintain their integrity and they'll return to form. And eventually go beyond that. I mean, when we go into plasticity, we train our body systems particularly the fascia we're talking about here, to reorganize itself and become, it's more responsive. And the elastic component is much more present.
Got it. So it's interesting how the body responds when you provided the right movement or the right stretching whenever it's required, and bring it back to an incorrect or not so healthy posture that you might be holding for months or even years together. The other question I had is, when you're doing these Qigong movements, right? Maybe at the start or especially at the end, you're placing both palms above your lower dantian, right? Or in yoga terms, above your sacral chakra. What's the significance of doing that? Why are you holding?
So, we have three dantians in the body. One we find here at the brain, one at the heart, and then one about 3 finger widths below the navel and about 2 centimeters inside the body. And these are known in the Taoist medical Qigong system as cauldrons or the sea of qi. So this is an area which is really sensitive to qi collection and transmission. So we can actually store qi effectively here. We learn to house it in this part of the body. And we do that with different ways. We have using a pearl, pulsing a pearl of qi in the body with the breath. We can also use a spiraling of the hands to do this. And actually more like, let me just stand to show you. So your hands remain on the body, but then you spiral outwards and then back in.
Got it.
So that's another method.
Very interesting. So basically these are like wells or places where the qi sort of congregates in these three centers.
Yes, and that's the cup we want to fill. And you can also store qi in other parts of the body. For example, in bone marrow breathing, you're pulling it right inside the bone marrow and you want to store it inside the bone marrow.
Mm-hmm. Right. And speaking about bone marrow, inside the bone marrow, you have stem cells, right? So I'm sure there's some influence that is happening there as well as a result of the breathing that you're doing, as well as the movements that is allowing you to further or the proliferation of the stem cells or make them more usable so that you can live longer or forever.
That's right. it's true. So that's one of the consequences of regular practice. It said, you know, that you have this deep stem cell regenerative potential.
So following up with that question, what are some of the indicators of youth according to Qigong? And how can Qigong, you know, help us live longer? What are some of the levers, I guess, that we can pull?
The indicators of youth would be that we can move, we're fully mobile.
Okay.
So that's one. And that means that we can function in an everyday capacity using a full range of motion without pain.
Okay.
Would be to have a really good sense of balance. So I know that when kids are young, you know, we would get worried they're going to hurt themselves, but you know, most of the time they know what to do. They have quite a, once they've sort of developed their muscular responses, their balance is pretty good.
Right.
And they can also learn to let go pretty quickly so they can relax into falling. So so that would be another thing is that having that relaxation response. So that's going to keep you younger for longer. And think about how a kid can so quickly switch off from one thing to another and not hold it and not keep it inside them. I mean, I know there are situations where that doesn't happen. I understand that there's a great deal of trauma in the world, but just thinking of a typical average lucky child that just, you know, can drop their ice cream and then be shown something else, off they go. And they don't retain it. They don't retain that trauma. So that's another aspect, I think, of youth that we can attain through the Qigong. Then breathing properly. Now, if you watch a baby breathe and you see how they breathe with their entire spine, you've got this beautiful wave of movement. And so by learning how to do that or maintaining that type of breathing, we're not only getting longer, slower breaths. So you know, the body is fully integrating, fully using the breath cycle in a way that's just really harmonious for all of its systems. We're also, as I said before, pumping up the cerebrospinal fluid more effectively. So we're thinking better. We're less likely to, I guess, get, diseases of the brain or afflictions that take away our mental capacity.
Got it. And these are foundational, right? I mean, like you mentioned, being able to move properly without any pain, but also noticing how and what muscles or ligaments or bones are involved when you're moving through space.
Mm.
Just being mindful about your emotions and not getting attached too much to your emotions, but being able to switch easily and not getting, not holding on too much, but also breathing. And unfortunately, breath work is not taught in a lot of schools. I remember when I was in school, somebody would say, breathe fully in. I would tuck my stomach in and breathe all the way to the chest. Now I know that's the barrier of breathing, because that activates your sympathetic nervous system, right? And unless you really breathe all the way down to your belly and your diaphragm, you're not really leveraging your parasympathetic response, which is the one that helps you really digest and heal and sleep better.
And all these practices, they work on so many levels, and we can even just touch upon that we are utilizing the jing, which is not just kidney energy, it's sexual energy as well, and that we can revitalize our sexual energy through the practices too. We can turn it inwards, we can cultivate it, we can transform it, and we can heal on many levels in that way. Also, it just reminded me of one of our Qigong practitioners who taught her husband how to do this Qigong, and they were trying to conceive and they hadn't had any luck, and they set their intention, they did the practices for 2 months, and then she was able to conceive.
Right. Yeah, that's so beautiful. It's so wonderful. And sometimes sex gets a negative connotation, but the truth is that sex is just an energy. And whether you look at yoga, tantra, you have, that lineage of teachings over there. You have Taoist sexual qigong. And I know that Mantak Chia wrote an entire book about that, both for males and one for females. And the more we really learn about these energies and how they contribute towards our well-being, but also how, in the case of males, we're actually letting go of our qi through, ejaculation and things like that, we have a better way to understand not only how to optimize our health, but also the role that masculinity and femininity play, just like the yin and yang in the world, and that can lead to more balance and restoration. So the thing I love about Qigong is it's not just the practices and the mindset, but it's also a philosophy of how you are living in life. So that's amazing.
Yeah, that's what appeals to me as well. I mean, when I met Jai, my partner, he'd been studying with local Taoists, and they introduced me also to the Tao Te Ching, and I studied weekly with a beautiful lady who volunteered her time, and we'd unpack these beautiful characters, these Chinese characters, for meaning, and then we would give our own interpretations on the texts, and we'd drink green tea, and we'd sit with also the owner of the cafe, and he would just talk about life and his perspectives from being a Taoist.
Yeah.
And all of that was just, it was such a profound introduction to that aspect of the Qigong, that when I thought, well, I don't just want to practice modern medical Qigong. And while that is great, it really treats symptoms, and it's an amalgamation of all the good parts of Qigong, and it's controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, and so it doesn't actually really reflect the spiritual aspect and that philosophy of the Taoist side of things. So that was something I thought, well, I really value that, and I'd like to explore it further and bring that to other people as well, because it's given me peace. It's helped me through some of the most difficult traumatic times, losing both my parents within 5 years, and that, the Qigong kept me going, helped me to be more available for my family and friends at the time, friends of my parents, and to not get sick. And then even when I did get sick last year, I actually had dengue fever.
Oh, really?
I contracted it in Thailand. I was assisting Master Tevye in Thailand, in Koh Samui. I got ill, but I found, and this must sound really weird, but I kind of enjoyed the illness. I like, okay, I'm using all my skills to just be present to this illness. What's it teaching me? What's going on?
Yeah.
And also in the nurses and doctors said, we think there's something wrong with you. Your heart rate's too low. And I said, no, it's okay. That's my qigong.
Yeah, it's so amazing when you do these practices, whether it's breathwork or qigong, you sort of lean into pain, right? It's like whether you're going into a cold shower or whether you're embracing an illness, and it feels like you are detaching yourself from the experience that you're having, and you're like in the center of a tornado, right? You're at the eye of the storm, and no matter what happens, it's not going to affect you. You can look at it objectively and go through, or maybe absorb whatever the universe is trying to communicate with you, whatever the message it is saying, whether it's go forth or hey, you know what, you got to take a break now, you did too much.
That's right.
My next question was about the pelvic floor muscles, because in breath work, when we're doing the breath work, the conscious breathing, at a certain point we're also engaging the pelvic floor muscles, the Mooladhara, and really pumping it up. And I noticed that you did the same thing when you were guiding some people through one of the qigong flows. So maybe could you talk to us about the purpose of really engaging and pulling on these muscles?
Yes. So when we talk about the pelvic floor muscles, well, specifically when someone's able to isolate the perineal muscles, that's what we're looking for. And so the perineum is this point between the anus and the genitals. And we pull upwards from that point. Mm-hmm. And when people have difficulty finding that, then we just talk more generally about the pelvic floor, or perhaps just squeezing from the anus. But this is another pump. So it's a really important pump in the body. Mm-hmm. And this will enable the flow of chi. And there's a connection from the perineum right up through the body into the brain. So, you know, this signal is really important for this signal. So they correlate with each other.
Interesting. And it's so fascinating that our body is designed to have this pump, right? To really help with, you know, communicating from different parts of the body. And sometimes we assume that we're this one individual, but actually there's so much happening in our body, right? Our brain is talking to our gut and through the heart.
Yeah.
It's a very complex mechanism that's happening, even if we're just walking.
Yeah, that's right. That's so true. This whole neural response. So, I mean, neuroscience, I wish I could, if I had another time around, you know, I'd love to study neuroscience as well. And I look at it from just a point of interest at the moment, but the neuromuscular aspect of qigong as well is training the body systems to, especially where we might have had trauma in the body, and there's a neural feedback, ooh, unsafe, or ooh, this is, you know, this is related to something that hurt me once. We can get through that by relaxing, for tapping into the parasympathetic state more, relaxing into that, and then retraining the way our mind thinks about the particular movement, which is way. I mean, Tevye has a story about how he healed from a really bad car accident through persistence. I mean, it took a long time. It was a couple of years, but they said they were going to do surgery on his spine, but he just did the wave or the drag and back exercise for 2 years every day for a particular amount of time, and he was able to overcome these injuries that way.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And out of the animals that are emulated in this form of qigong, I've noticed that the dragon is only the quote-unquote mythical creature, right? But I read somewhere that there was this traveler from the West that had at one point gone and visited one of the kingdoms in China, and he had met with the king as well. And in his texts, he has noted down these, that's what he said, these are dragons, like large reptilian animals. And so then the question is, were these dragons or were these some other animals or did they go extinct?
Right. I like to believe they were real. I mean, you know, what the Welsh tradition in Great Britain, Wales has a tradition of dragons as well. So who knows? We've got to wait and perhaps dig up some bones.
Yeah. I mean, something to think about, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So since, at least right now, we're in the midst of this crazy pandemic that is going on around the world and, you know, people are wearing masks. But then the question is, how does somebody who is sitting at home or maybe in transit right now, how, when you're doing this Qigong or when you're doing these different practices, what needs to happen inside the body for immunity to build up? Could you break that down for us a bit?
There needs to be a surrender, I think, to understanding where you're at that particular moment in time. Mm-hmm. But then there needs to be a sensitivity built up towards your internal landscape, as we spoke before. There needs to be, you need to practice directing your attention and your intention of what you want to achieve from the practice. You need to, for just the very, very simple things, you can practice anywhere all the time. You can just drop into your abdomen. You can put your hands on the dantian and you can practice abdominal breathing. You just follow the rise and fall of your belly, gently close your eyes, and start to bring your breath into just a rising and falling that becomes just naturally softer and longer. So you're not pushing it. You're not trying to change anything. You're just bringing the awareness to the dantian, and you're witnessing the rise and fall of the belly as you inhale and as you exhale. So you let these things unfold in quite a natural manner. So that's important, not forcing. And not forcing is also key to relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And this is something someone can do even at home or whenever they have even 2 to 3 minutes.
Yes.
Just breathing with a focus and on your rising and falling of your belly with your eyes closed, and it can make a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Wonderful. Well, thanks a lot for sharing everything that you've shared so far, the stories, the anecdotes, the wisdom, and I appreciate you sharing the scientific part of it in a way that allows the end listener to really understand some of the concepts that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Some of them were a bit complex, but I'm hoping that people were able to understand it.
Yeah, forgive me, I get carried away. But I still feel like, you know, I mean, I'm only really a beginner with all of this, and there's so much to learn. And I appreciate being given the platform to share it.
Absolutely. And Action Tribe, I hope you enjoyed today's session so far. I try to speak to our listeners one-on-one from time to time. We have Facebook messages or Instagram DMs, mm-hmm. or maybe if somebody emails me. And I know that many of you are going through challenges. And sometimes challenges are such that it really forces you, right, to start over again. Maybe you've lost your job and you have to find a new one now. Maybe your business has failed or a temporary failure and you feel like you're at square one and you got to start once again. Maybe you had a divorce or maybe you had a breakup after 4 years, 5 years, or even 10 years. I've seen a lot of people going through such an experience. And you feel now that you've lost time, you've lost energy, and you've lost your vitality, and that you're starting from the very beginning. I want to let you know that feeling like you're starting from scratch is just a mental trap. It's not true. Although it might feel like you're starting from the beginning, you are never starting from the beginning. And all the magical moments that you've enjoyed, whether in your business or your job or even with that loved one, they are yours to keep forever. Life is a cycle and we keep going through these phases, just like the waxing and waning of the moon. So you must not lose hope and always remember that you are better because of this. Because as Qigong Master Paul Lam once put, think of the circular path of each movement in Tai Chi. Every movement is a curve or a circle that has no ending and has no beginning. And just like in Tai Chi and Qigong, just like in your life, there's no beginning, there's no ending. There's just cycles, and you're always learning from each and every moment, each and every experience. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, it's our time to go into our last round for today, which is the wisdom round. Four questions so that our listeners can take note and they can actually take some form of action. So, Sarah, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received in your life?
It's so simple, but so profound that my mother always said to me, be kind, be kind. And it kind of ties in with one of my favorite sayings, which is we're all just walking each other home, which comes from Ram Dass. And so I just try to remind myself of that all the time. We're all just, you know, we're one step away from being somebody else. We're just,
very true.
So how can I judge or criticize when I remember that, and I can be more helpful in my interactions and engagements with others as a consequence of bearing that in mind.
And if you could turn back time and spend maybe 1 hour with someone who's living or dead, who would it be?
I love that question. I had to think about that, and I came up with Lao Tzu. I would just love to go and visit Lao Tzu, and because his timeless classic, the Tao Te Ching, has given me pause for so much thought, and it's, you know, there's so much complexity in its simplicity that it's had sages and scholars for centuries, you know, pondering what it all means and trying to glean the most effective transmission of the message. I think that's he must be or have been quite an amazing human being.
And what is that one thing you do in the morning or in the evening before you sleep that has improved the quality of your life?
I would say it's gratitude meditation and the inner smile, which is a beautiful Qigong practice where we just bring the energy of smiling with physical smile and in the mental body down into the organs. So I smile into my heart. I say, hey, you know, good morning. And at night, more than in the morning, I do practice the gratitude meditation. I'm thankful for this, and this that happened today. And that just, you know, keeps me on accountable. It keeps me on target. It keeps me humble.
That's so powerful to be able to have a gratitude practice. And for me, the smaller the gratitude, the better. Because you can feel grateful for big things, but sometimes if you're grateful for the smaller things, that has an effect on you. Just the ability to listen to this podcast right now, it means that you have access to internet in some form, which is a form of gratitude that you can have to be able to access such wisdom for free.
Yeah. Or that your ears work, you know, that's just.
Or how your ears work, yeah. Exactly. And if you're, I know people, you won't believe it, who are deaf but still consume the podcast. And there it's crazy because they get text that the technology is able to convert. And so there's an opportunity for gratitude for technology in that case. Yeah. But I was really surprised. There was someone who was not able to hear but still listens to the podcast, which is like, what else can I be grateful for, right?
That's amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, if you could recommend one book for our listeners, what would that be?
Well, although I've already spoken about the Tao Te Ching, I think... it's funny, I've got it right here. The book I'm going to recommend is Autobiography of a Yogi. And this is written by Paramahansa Yogananda, and it documents his journey through life as a yogi with his masters, and how he, you know, ended up journeying from India to America, and the messages that he wanted to transmit as a result of his explorations and in yoga. And he was a, you know, profoundly humble and deep and beautiful soul. And I was just so excited reading that book, because when I was a kid, I dreamt about bilocating. I dreamt about all these things I had no idea about. people that could be in two places at the same time, right. People that could manifest an object. And this all happens in this book that, yeah. that his masters show him, and in humility, not in, you know, in any aggrandizement. So we may call that esoteric.
Yeah.
But it excited me, ignited my fire to learn about my human potential as a spiritual being, having a human experience.
Very true. And for somebody who's listening right now, remember that the amount of magic that we're tapping into in our normal being is just probably 1%, right, of what is possible.
That's right.
And yeah. we have access to all these siddhis, these extrasensory abilities and all these fascinating stuff that you only watch in Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. Yeah. It's possible. It is possible. Mm. So don't, you know, limit your understanding of the human existence by just what's happening around you. Most of it is stupid. What do you see in the news and the advertisements?
That's right.
And, you know, people forcing you to buy, like, you know, shoes and stuff. Well, that's good. But what is more important, like you mentioned, is to be kind, but also to be able to access all these higher abilities and really understand what it means to be a human being. So if you would like to listen to this book for free, audible.com is offering all our listeners an opportunity to get one book, one Audible credit, where you not just read the book, but you listen to the book. So especially if you're busy, going for a jog, you're doing something else, you can listen to the book and it's free for you. You don't pay anything. But to get this book, Autobiography of a Yogi, one of the most recommended books on our show and in the world before Steve Jobs had expired, that's the book that he had on his iPad. So yeah, that was the book that he had. But go to my7chakras.com/free book. Go to my7chakras, 7 is a word, my7chakras.com/free book. And especially because so many of our guests have recommended this book, go there, type Autobiography of a Yogi. Don't pay anything right now. Download the book. You get a free 30-day trial. You can cancel it before that. But if you like the service of audible.com, you can get more books as well. But at least get this book. but Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. Before you go, tell us something that you're grateful for, since you love gratitude, and tell us how we can find you online.
I am grateful for, well, this very moment, being with you. I'm grateful for living in this incredible space that I live in. I have access to nature out the backyard, koalas, kangaroos, echidnas, little birds, parrots. They give me such joy, and, you know, that reminds me that how intrinsically connected I am to that you know, I am no better than these creatures, and we resonate, you know, with each other, and I love that every day. It just makes my heart sing. You can find me at sarahdivinechigong.com, and also I have a Facebook page under that name and an Instagram page. It's a fledgling page, but it's there. And you can find out more about White Tiger Qigong at the self-named website as well. We have a number of courses running at the moment.
Perfect. Awesome. Mm. We'll have all these links up in the show notes so that people can learn more about your story and find out more about the amazing work that you are doing. So Action Tribe, thanks a lot for attending the session. If you would like to join our next breathwork session, that is right, meet me live on Zoom and do these wonderful conscious breathing techniques, then go to my7chakras.com/breathworkpass. You get the breathwork pass and you get to attend these sessions, which we do on a Sunday morning, as well as on a weekday evening, which is more of a yin session, so that you get the support that you need to get good quality sleep, restful, healing sleep at night. But if you'd like to join us, feel free to do so. I'd love to connect with you. If you are on Instagram, then take a screenshot of this episode right now and then tag us. My handle is at my7chakras. And what is your handle? Is it by your name?
At Sarah Divine Qigong.
Okay, so tag us at my7chakras, at Sarah Divine Qigong. And we'll share your Instagram story with our communities, because that's how we connect, right? So do that. And if you'd like to email me, or if you have some questions, some observations, some feedback, my email is aj@my7chakras.com. aj@my7chakras.com. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today, talking to us about the beautiful practice of Qigong, and also introducing some beautiful elements of sports science, as well as the physiology and movement and the fascia. This was really a very informative session, and also taking us one step closer to a human revolution. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you for giving me the experience, the opportunity to share my passion with you.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my seven chakras.com.